And so, Dr. Vitti, among the state's six largest districts, I'm quoting here from the Times Union, Duval County Public Schools this week is reporting incidents of violence, threats, or disruptions are actually down 46%, not up. Yes?
Yes. I think the statistics matter. I think that it does indicate that our schools are becoming safer. I think all public schools throughout Florida and the country are becoming safer with more strategies, more investments. But I would say, and I did mention this in the Times Union, that a lot of that data I can't speak to. I wasn't superintendent at that time. I know a lot of teachers and even sometimes parents and students themselves have concerns about those statistics, meaning is everything truly reported when they occur at the school site? So it's hard to speak to the authenticity of that data. And I will say that moving into this school year, we have trained our principals, our assistant principals, our dean of disciplines, our guidance counselors to make sure that when incidents are occurring, they're reported. We shouldn't be afraid of the numbers. The numbers allow us to recognize where more intervention needs to be applied, more resources are applied. So 13, 14, whatever number we end up with at the end of the year, I think it will have more authenticity and we can make important decisions based on that. We shouldn't be afraid of what's actually happening in our schools, but instead reporting accurately.
You've made a number of changes in the year you've been superintendent, including you've bumped up the budget on school safety, armed student resource officers in every middle and high school, a bullying hotline. There's a task force on the issue. What's your response then to Circuit Judge Henry Davis's letter to the Times Union saying that violent kids should actually be banned from public schools?
Well, I think your breakdown of our new investment speaks to the fact that going into this school year, we recognize we needed to do more. Schools are safer, but we could certainly do more to make sure that every child is safe in every school every day. You know, back to Judge Davis's comments, again, I we have to be careful with generalizations. And I think the judge sees some of our most troubled youth in Jacksonville go through his courthouse. And you can't apply the experiences of those kids and what those kids do to all kids in all schools. Those students are facing some unfortunate situations often at home. Their parents are dealing with survival. They're not putting their children first. But these are an isolated number of kids that go into our schools. I have always been firm and will always be firm that when children repeatedly demonstrate that they are overly violent or not considerate of other children's learning opportunities, they have to be removed from the regular environment. That's why we have two alternative schools, Grand Park and Manny V. And we often send kids to those schools. We often move kids from one school to the other, one classroom out of the other. But we have to show progressive discipline. We cannot apply a philosophy of discipline where we're perpetuating the school to prison pipeline. And I think that a lot of the discussion is leading, I believe, to a reactionary way of dealing with discipline. And the progressive research-based way to deal with discipline issues is finding out why the child is making those bad decisions, talk through them, implement clear consequences, but find out what is going on with that child and how do we connect them to an adult so that they no longer make those decisions. And that's why we have an in-school suspension program, why we have deans and counselors and wraparound services like Girl Matters and City Year and Achievers for Life, so that we can apply those mentors and those wraparound services so children can make different decisions. But then again, when it is repeated, as far as the disciplinary concerns, children need a new environment because we don't want to ruin the learning opportunities of other children.
Lots of calls, meanwhile, for Duval County School Superintendent Dr. Nicolai Vitti. We'll go to your questions for the superintendent in just a moment at 549-2937. So, Dr. Vitti, what would you say to parents listening right now who, and they've called this program before, they've said, I've decided I'm putting my child in a parochial school or a private school, or I'm just going to move to St. John's County because I've lost faith in the Duval County public schools. I know that that's a big part of your portfolio, restoring that faith and trust.
Well, I think you can always hear a superintendent talk about the value of public education. But let's look at decisions that adults in this city have made influential leaders that have made regarding the schooling of their children, which knows directly leads to outcomes and opportunities for them down the road. All my children attend public schools. All of the mayor's children attend public schools. The former mayor, Peyton's children attend public schools. Board member Becky Couch's children attend public schools. Fel Lee's children attend public schools. Many of Paula Wright's nieces and nephews attend public schools. So if all of these individuals that have been successful in life and know that they have options and are putting their own children in public schools, why would no other child in this community be safe in our schools and not only be safe but receive a high-quality public education? The opportunity in public schools is to see the reality of this world, the diversity of race, ethnicity, socioeconomic background. And that reflects the reality of what college will be and, more importantly, the world of work. So the sooner that children are acclimated and exposed to that level of diversity and do not isolate them in what we see often in private schools, is that they will be more likely to be leaders and leaders in a country that is increasingly diverse and complex. And I think children at a young age and through adolescence and teenage and early adults, the earlier they're exposed to that diversity, the more likely they are to be the future leaders, because you cannot lead and learn how to lead in a confined, isolated environment.
Another topic that may soon come before you in your leadership capacity is the debate over whether to change the name of a school on the west side, Nathan Bedford Forrest High. Forrest, of course, one of the original founders or leaders of the Ku Klux Klan. A meeting last night on the issue, no vote was taken from a group of advisors on this, although it's my understanding the majority of people coming out to speak were against the name change. Where does this issue go from here?
Well, this we are waiting for Board Member Hall, who is the representative for that school, that area, to report back to us hopefully this week. She has been engaging stakeholders, including the SAC, PTA, students, parents, and community members in general about their feel about the issue. And so after that point, we will decide as a leadership team, meeting superintendent and board, regarding our next steps.
You're still in favor of a name change?
I am. I have spoken, I think, openly about my feelings. I think it is time to change the name of the school. When I speak nationally and people stop me, the first thing that they say is, don't you have a high school named after a former leader of the KKK? And I want Jacksonville to be known for what we're doing regarding children outcomes, graduation rates, reading proficiency, not the name of a school. And I think it is time for a change, but there's a right way to do it. And I think we're walking down that right road in how to do it, because it has to ultimately be owned by the community.
And lots of calls, meanwhile, for Duval County School Superintendent Dr. Nicolai Vitti. What are your questions this morning? Let's go to the phones. Lauren on the north side is with us. Good morning, Lauren. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, I hear you talking about progressive discipline, and I'm wondering what types of support or what types of systems are in place for teachers just across the county in terms of classroom management and to support teachers who are struggling, because I know that's a common area for teachers.
Thanks for that, Lauren.
Lauren, thank you for the question. We, this summer, had a teacher academy where about three-fourths of our students, our teachers participated, and one of the classes that were offered was on classroom management. We also have individuals that can support schools at the school level now with how we changed our professional development process. We have coaches at each of our schools that help teachers work through disciplinary issues. We now have dean of disciplines at every middle school and high school. They often go into classrooms and help teachers better structure their class regarding classroom management. And then as teachers come in, if they go through a traditional process to become a teacher, they are exposed to classroom management strategies in classes. But ultimately, it's really through experience that you learn how to manage a classroom so that all children can learn.
Let's go down to Orange Park. Scott is on the line. Hi, Scott. Are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Morning, Melissa. Two things. One's a question, and the other one is comment. The first question is, now I sued the school board twice. First over the closure of Normandy Elementary, which was an A school, and then West Kinnett Elementary, which was another A school. Small neighborhood elementary schools are known to have a residual effect on the students, producing higher marks and lower instances of violence. What are you going to do to either reverse that trend or prevent it from continuing? And the second one is on Forest. Now, I'm known as being basically a progressive. I'm a Yankee. I'm a Democrat. I originally was in favor of name change until I looked at the history of Forrest. Yes, he was a founder of the KKK, but that's when they were against carpetbaggers and Republicans. When that focus had changed and they became violent, he tried to disband the KKK. The instances at Fort Pillow, if you dig into it, you find that he actually tried to stop the violence, protect the soldiers who were surrendering.
Okay. So you're no longer in favor of the name change?
I was in favor until I did the research.
Okay.
People have taken propaganda and myth and treated it as fact. And they don't dig. They say KKK. Well, you know, did the KKK start out hating Jews? No. They added that.
Sure.
They did that too.
Okay, Scott.
I
take your point completely. It's just that we have so many other callers waiting.
One quick other thing. I started a petition myself, and in 5 days have gotten near 200 signatures. 95% of my people on that have signed that petition to keep the name are Forrest alumni.
Okay. Thanks, Scott. Sorry to cut you off, Scott, but Dr. Vitti, could you respond?
Sure. If I understood the first question right, it's about small elementary schools, mainly neighborhood schools that in the past have been closed because of low enrollment. It is a touchy subject. I do believe that every school is a pillar of the community and certainly a fabric of the community. And interestingly enough, even in light of the conversation about Judge Davis's comments, if you ask children, especially in the urban core, they will tell you that they consistently feel more comfortable and more safe in their school than their community. Often schools are a safe haven for them when we look at the violence that's occurring in our communities. But linked to that, and I think the issue of closing schools is very important. On a financial level, but also the message that it sends to the community. We are right now focusing on trying to increase enrollment in these schools and not close them. We have tried to expand Head Start, as many of you know, in partnership with Episcopal. We have applied for the additional slots at the Head Start grant and placed them in many of our low enrollment elementary schools so that we are working with children at a young age, starting in infant, toddlers, 3 and 4 year olds, so that those same children end up going to the elementary. So that's one way to increase the use of the capacity of our low enrollment elementary schools. Also linked to the conversation regarding Judge Davis's comments is a initiative that we call Discover Duval Schools. It's in partnership with JPEF, and collaboratively, we are trying to get as many people into our schools as possible to see them that haven't been there before. So they don't rely on gossip, they don't rely on rumors, they don't rely on stereotypes, but they actually visit our public schools, walk the halls, see what's happening in the classroom. We've had a couple of these events already, and what's most interestingly about these events and these opportunities is individuals that even attended private schools will say, that maybe went 20, 30 years ago, will say the level of expectations and what kids are doing in the classroom, even in traditionally low-performing schools, is higher than what I was expected to do even at a private school 20, 30 years ago. You don't see kids running the halls. You don't see fights breaking out in the hallways or in the cafeteria. Kids are there to learn. Do we have challenges? Absolutely. Do we need to address them? Yes. But I encourage everyone to go to discoverduvalschools.org to sign up to visit one of these schools and see what we're doing. And this is also part of demonstrating what we're doing, but also bringing people back. Interestingly enough, last point, because I know we have a lot of callers, is that this year we've increased enrollment by 3,600 students. That's the first time we've seen enrollment increase over many years in Duval school's history. And I think that that is an indication that most people see that feel as if we're moving in the right direction.
Yeah. What about Scott's comment that after researching the issue on forests, he's changed his mind?
Well, I encourage everybody to do their homework on Nathan B. Forrest and come to their own conclusion. That's why we live in a democracy. But with that said, having done my homework on the issue, I still believe that it's the right thing to do regarding changing the name of the school.
Let's go to Keith in Riverside. Hi, Keith. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Dr. Vitti, it's a pleasure to listen to you and hear your opinions. I just wanted to say that Nathan Bedford Forrest was a slave trader, a slave breaker. He was a killer before, during, and after the Civil War. The Ku Klux Klan was built and designed to keep black people from exercising their rights, carpetbaggers, etc. The carpetbaggers came down to take advantage of the Southerners because the Southerners were taking advantage of the black people. I mean, that's just a ludicrous argument. You know, I'm embarrassed for this city that we're still having this discussion after all this time. And if I'm embarrassed, I can't imagine how bad it must be for you to try to explain to someone why we still have a school named after this individual. I could care less what the alumni think. Reasonable people know what the right thing is to do, and I think you're a reasonable person. I just hope we get it done soon, because this is a scab that we keep picking at, and it gets bigger and nastier the more we pick at it.
That's Keith in Riverside. Thanks for the call, Keith. Audrey down in St. Augustine emails the show, consider renaming the school for the late Stetson Kennedy. Audrey, thanks for those thoughts. Let's go to Johnny in Washington Heights this morning. Good morning, Johnny. You're on the air.
Good morning, Melissa, Dr. Vitti. I have a statement more than a comment, and my statement is more to the fact I'm an African-American, and I'm against changing the name of Nathan Bedford Forrest. And for the simple fact is, are we going to go around and change the name of memorials and schools of everybody who's done wrong? Andrew Jackson caused a trail of tears. Are we going to change Jacksonville next? My statement.
All right. Thanks for the call, Johnny.
Thank you for the call. At this point, there has not been conversation regarding the changing of the name of any other schools. So the conversation has been focused solely on Forrest. At the end of the day, I think this is something that needs a shift to the community. I think we've had already a vibrant conversation, which is healthy. But as I indicated before, based on all the aspects of this issue, I still believe that the name of the school should change, but I am not the one, as superintendent, that believes that I should be the one imposing that decision. It should come from the ground up, which means from the Forrest community, and that is basically where we leave it as of now until we hear Dr. Hall's update.
And we'll go back to your calls in just a moment at 549-2937. Meanwhile, lots of feedback coming in on social media and some questions about testing. Zach tweets the show, will you ask Superintendent Vitti how to find the balance between gathering important data on our students and over-testing them? And then on our Facebook page from Michael, would Dr. Vitti support getting rid of the FCAT? Actually, Michael, they are getting rid of the FCAT. And going back to teaching kids, not teaching to the test. In my opinion, the FCAT has been a failure. It has handcuffed and pressured teachers and actually dumbed down education. Lots of feedback on that.
Thank you for that question, because I think it speaks to a lot of the issues and concerns that we have in public schools, specifically here in Duval. I want to be very clear on this, and I'm glad I had the opportunity to speak to it. I believe that we need an accountability system that measures how our kids are doing. I don't want to go back to the day. I remember being a teacher without a systemic way of looking at whether our kids are learning. And there was not accountability in the classroom. There was not a conversation about the achievement gap. There was not a clear way to systematically identify kids that needed additional support. And I think that's what an accountability system does. With that said, we cannot create a school environment or a classroom environment where we're teaching to the test. And I want everyone to hear it directly from me, is that the last thing that I want to see when I go to a classroom are workbooks. I don't want to see teaching to the test. I don't want kids reading a passage and then deciding whether the answer is A, B, C, or D. The best teachers are the ones that teach the standards. Our curriculum guides are designed to teach to the standards. And unfortunately, over the past 10 years, namely in Florida, is instruction has migrated to teaching to the test. And even when teachers often say, I want more creativity, I want to be able to have more autonomy over what I'm doing in the classroom, no one has ever, and including myself, at least since I've been superintendent, told this teacher how to teach. What we've tried to do is create curriculum guides that pace the teaching of the standards so that children are exposed to all of those standards at the end of the year, which they're going to be held accountable, the student and the teacher. But how that's done is completely up to the teacher on how to teach to those standards. What we want to see in the classroom is application, synthesis, analysis, discussion of text, and not recall memorization type of strategy. So you're hearing directly from the superintendent, we want to see the opposite in the classroom, not teaching to the test, because that doesn't teach children how to think. And we want critical thinkers. We want individuals that can problem solve. The best teachers, the ones that are most successful, teach the standards at a high level. And then when it comes to the test, the kids have absorbed the right strategies and the right information to then apply it to a test. We have now come to the understanding, unfortunately, that we are going to raise test scores by teaching the test. That is counter opposite of exactly what leads to higher student achievement. And so we're hoping that we're helping and trying to facilitate a new classroom environment where we're not talking about tests, but to the standards. Very quickly, what is the balance? That's a great question, and we're trying to figure that out. Why do we need tests throughout the school years to determine where kids stand? Unfortunately, in Duval County Public Schools, we haven't had interim assessments that really allow us to see where kids are until FCAT comes. And if I apply, if you go to a doctor and a doctor says that you have an illness and you're given medication, you have to go back to see if that medication is working. So you have to reevaluate depending on the standing of that illness. In Duval County Public Schools, we are waiting until the end of the year to see how kids are performing. We need those points of check-in to make sure that our kids are learning. And if they're not, how do we do things differently to catch them up so that they are where they should be? But we do need to create the right balance, and that has to come through the input of teachers, and we're trying to define that right balance as we move forward.
Lots of calls. Meanwhile, let's get a couple more of you on the air. Marlena on the south side. Hi, Marlena. Are you still there? Okay, give us a call back. Will in Jacksonville. Hello, Will. All right, we've lost a few. They've just been holding. Let's go out to the beaches. Nicole in Jacksonville Beach. Hi, Nicole. Good morning to you.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Okay.
Okay, great. My question is this. It does seem, and I recently moved to Jacksonville, and it does seem like the school board in Jacksonville operates in their own world. For instance, I had to fight to have dyslexia recognized for my child. And also, you just talked about testing can't be the only thing, yet still you guys focus a lot of the services and the intervention that you have for students based on the FCAT score. For instance, I have a child who is very advanced in math. She got a high 4, very close to a 5, and because she did not get a 5, cannot take an advanced math course because that's just the way you guys do things and that's just the rules. How are you going to address the fact that we need to be more comprehensive and more in line with what's going on in the rest of the country rather than just what's going on in Jacksonville?
That's Nicole at the beaches. Thanks, Nicole.
Well, I think I agree with everything that you said. Sometimes we are required by state statute to make decisions regarding FCAT, for example, when a child needs to take a remediation class. That's dictated by an FCAT score being below grade level. As far as dyslexic students, I have spoken out about my own dyslexia. We are creating new schools for dyslexic students in order to tailor their individual needs. Regarding your child being in advanced placement class, please send me an email directly about that, because I do believe that decisions regarding student placement should not just be based on a standardized test, especially when it comes to taking high-level classes. Email me directly with your child's name, the school that you're at, and I will be sure to advocate on your behalf, because I do think with your child's scores as they are and your type of involvement, maybe on the surface someone didn't think that your child could take that class, but I believe that they should. So simply email me.
All right, and let's go to Ron on the west side. Hello, Ron. Thanks for holding.
My name is Bron. Thank you for taking the call. I grew up in Jacksonville. I'm a product of the public school system. Unfortunately, I am definitely on the negative side of the public school system. My kids currently attend a very expensive private school, and I'm not a rich man. I have to have scholarships and special funding just to be able to put them through those schools. But on the point that the superintendent made, by the way, the former superintendent when I was in school was my dad's second cousin, Stan Jordan. So I know a lot about the school system that a lot of people don't know. And the increase in enrollment in public schools, you can't just say, well, we've had an increase and that's because our schools are better, because that's absolutely incorrect. It's because the economy has dropped and people can't afford to send them their kids to the schools they want to send them to. There's not enough funding to send them to the schools they want to send them to. So your enrollment has increased as a result of that, not as a result of the schools improving. And it speaks to the environment of the schools, the social environment that the kids interact with. I wouldn't send my kids to public schools simply for that fact alone.
Okay.
Thanks for the environment of the kids.
Sure. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the comments. And certainly he's not alone in his sentiments. So what are your final thoughts about that? And it is certainly a challenge for the district.
Well, I would invite the individual to actually visit a public school. I think what has happened in Jacksonville, because of the history of accreditation in the past, desegregation, and then just rumors and gossip, where a lot of parents are making decisions on hearsay. And even they may be even hearing some negative stories from a particular parent or teacher, and that's truly legitimate. But I would invite any parent to visit one of their neighborhood schools and just walk to school, talk to the principal, walk in the classrooms. And I think they would be pleasantly surprised at what they're seeing. And there is very little that's happening in a private school that cannot happen in a public school and that doesn't happen in a public schools. I think we look at private schools as a way to isolate our children from what we think what is the reality of our society. And public schools are safe. They can be safer. We need to work on that. But please go to discoverduvalschools.org. Be a part of one of those walkthroughs, or just call your local principal and ask to visit the school site. You know, to say that people aren't coming back to schools because we're improving, every statistic, whether it's reading, math, and writing and science, we're moving in the upward direction. Our graduation rate moving in the upward direction. So you can't argue that we're not improving, and you can't argue that there isn't new confidence and, I think, hope in public education. And we just have to continue to deliver on that hope. So we're not just talking about rhetoric, but we're actually talking about results. And I know that will continue to be the case as we move forward. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Dr. Vitti, for joining us. We appreciate it.